Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on A Profitable Servant, right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. This surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from your bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. And that's according to the estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Now, closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about us is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about this thing of a profitable servant because there's a great deal of unemployment, not just here in the United States, but worldwide. I just saw a number the other day, 20 million Chinese are out of work. Right now it's 5 million Americans, and it looks like that by the end of 2009, 7 million Americans are going to become unemployed. Now add 7 to 5, and that's 12 million. The numbers today are frightening, quite frankly, and people calling the law school will tell us, you know, that we're really nervous. My wife was over at Gainesville Building Supply yesterday, and she said she was the only customer in the store. Now, let me tell you, in Gainesville Building Supply, I mean, they've got 5 or 6 salesmen in there. And when you go in there, you usually have 10 or 15 people. They're 3 deep, and you've got to stand in line. I have never been in Gainesville Building Supply when I was the only customer at any time of day. So when my wife told me, said, hey, you know, something ain't right here, I was into the building supply store and I was the only customer. I said, uh-oh. The real world has now struck Ozark County. Now, that's what's been going on around the world. And there's a story in the Bible. It just kind of happens there's a story in the Bible here that talks about economic security. Economic security. It's called the Pearl of Great Price. Now, you know, you people out there have bought the Pearl of Great Price. I don't know if you knew that or not, but remember when you signed up for college and you took all those courses and you became a lawyer or you became a doctor, you became a real estate broker, you know, whatever it was, you were buying the Pearl of Great Price. You believed when you signed up for college that when you finished the course that you were going to have economic security for the rest of your life. Remember when you went down and you signed that mortgage on your home? Remember you signed this mortgage and you agreed to pay for this house so much a month for the next 30 years. You were buying the hid treasure in the field. Honest to God, you believed that this house was going to go up in value. You were going to develop equity. And that someday when this house was paid off, you were going to have a real nest egg. You're going to have economic security. I mean, that's the purpose for buying that house, isn't it? I mean, that's the purpose for going to college, isn't it? When you took your job, remember when you signed on for the Exxon Mobil Corporation as a geologist? Or you signed on to Microsoft, or you signed on to IBM or General Electric or whatever? Do you remember the economic security that you envisioned when you signed on there? I'm going to take this job, and this job is going to pay me all this money, and I'm going to buy all these houses and all these good things and live the good life, and I'm going to have economic security. It was the pearl of great price. I mean, you sold everything you had. When you went to college, son, you took everything you had, and probably a whole lot more, and went into debt in order to get this education. When you signed that mortgage contract, you know, on that house for 30 years, I mean, you not only gave all you had, you promised all that you didn't have for the next 30 years, but that you hoped to get and pay it over in order to obtain this pearl of great price, this hid treasure in the field. Let me read it to you. It's in Matthew chapter 13. So if you went to Matthew 13, starting in verse 44, just three verses here. It says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in the field, the which, when a man has found it, he hides, and for joy thereof goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. You know, if you were walking around, and, you know, you just happen to find a vein of gold in some guy's field. You know, you're walking around out in the hills here, you know, and you find this vein of gold right there on the surface. And you say, oh, my God, look at that. Would you sell everything that you could get your hands on, everything that you own, so that you could buy that field that contains that vein of gold? Again, the kingdom of heaven, verse 45, is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who when he has found one pearl of great price, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. Why? Why would you go out and sell everything that you've got to buy this one pearl? If it wasn't that you believe that this pearl is so valuable that when I get this pearl, I'm going to sell it. It's kind of like the Hope Diamond, you know. Would you pay $100 for the Hope Diamond? Would you sell all that you had to buy the Hope Diamond so that you could break it up into smaller pieces and sell it for much more profit or much greater money than you paid for it? So when we go out into the world, you know, when we're young people, I did. When I was 15 years old. Remember, I went to work for Frank Rocha. for $175 a month. God, I had arrived. You know, I'm out here working in the real marketplace and making real money now. And then I looked at my boss, Frank Roach, and I said, wow, look at this guy. He's got 240 acres. He's got 140 cows. He's got 40 heifers, 40 calves, two bulls, four horses, a car, pickup, money in the bank. Look at this guy. And then I compared myself, and I said, now, I don't own any land. I don't own any cattle. I don't have any horses. I don't have a car. I don't have any pickups. I don't have any money in the bank. But I got a job. And I had high hopes. And I said, maybe someday I can own a farm with cows and horses and have money in the bank and have a pickup. Well, today, as an old man like Frank was, you know, when he was an old man, I thought a man 50 years old was an old man, but I changed my view when I got to be 70. Now I'm 70, and I talk about old people, you know, old people that are 80, 90 years old, elderly people. I talk about the elderly. Those are 80 and 90 now, see. The older you get, the higher the elderly goes up. Well, now I've got the land, and I've got the cattle. I don't have any horses. I passed on the horses, but I got a pickup. It ain't running, but I got one. And I've got a car. Now, I got money. I don't have any in the bank, but I got two nickels to rub together. Now, isn't that what everybody wants? Isn't that why we go to college? Isn't that why we sign the mortgage on the house? All right. Now, this mortgage and interest violate the scriptures. And these practices that we get involved in, like working for these big corporations and so on, a lot of them violate biblical law. The laws that God told you don't do that, like unjust weights and balances. For instance, he says, thou shalt not steal. Of course, you're smarter than that. So you said, well, that's nuts. I'm going to go work, and I'm going to get paper money and checks and buy a 401k and invest in stocks and bonds and all these things. See, you thought that a 401k or a Kroger plan was the pearl of great price. That's why you bought it. See, and your employer, he said, now for every dollar you put into that 401k, I'm going to put in so much. Sometimes they have matching funds. You put in $100, your employer puts in $100. That was the pearl of great price, and you believed that. That's why you did that. Now, if you've been watching the stock market over the last 18 months, about October, I believe it was, October of 2007, I think the market hit the peak, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure that was when it did. Or something close to that. 14,000. Did you take a look at the stock market now the other day? It was 65 or 6,600. Then it rebounded, I think, at 68. But it's down below 7,000. All right, now here's what's happened to your pearl of great price in your 401k, which is heavily invested in stocks and bonds. Poof. 50% of your pearl of great price is gone. Just evaporated. Those are the unjust weights and balances that you invested in that God told you don't do that. I don't know if anybody explained that to you. But the God of creation, you know, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this odd God, not the kinder, gentler God, not the nice guy God, but, you know, the harsh Old Testament God, you know, the one that killed Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea and killed all those people at Sodom and Gomorrah. All right, that's the one I'm talking about. He said, don't do that. That's bad for you. Paying usury and interest, that's a bad program. So you went out and signed that mortgage, you know, on the house. Have you noticed that the value of your house, poof, 40% of it's gone. And we think that another 30 or 40% is going to go over the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. That's your pearl of great price. You invested in that. Now, What we've been talking about this week is your employment, your job. Remember, you went to college, put yourself in debt, got that student loan so you could get that degree so that you could go out in the marketplace and get that job. And now what's happening? Poof! Your job is about to evaporate. So you've lost the equity in your house, lost all of the equity in your stocks, and now you're about ready to lose your job. Now, little Georgie Gordon sitting over here never lost a dime in the real estate market, never lost a dime in the stock market, and I'm not going to lose my job. Now, I did something different than you did, Bob, but I want to tell you what it is so that you can correct that. You see, Bob, you've been practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Remember, you went out and got a Social Security number so you could get that job? So then you had to pay the income tax, and that took a third of everything you created and produced. Then you went out and practiced unjust weights and balances and bought all the stocks and bonds and lost your shirt, signed a mortgage which violated the Ten Commandments, and you paid usury and interest, and now you've lost half the value of your house. Now listen, I'm not here rubbing your nose in it now. See, Bob, I did all of that myself. I tested it all. I don't think you people out there in radio land have done anything that I haven't already done. I went out and bought and did all these things and used all these unjust weights and balances, paid usury and interest, leveraged myself out, got into real estate, maxed out my credit cards, and it didn't work for me. It didn't work. I tested communism. I'm telling you, I was a practicing communist. I was a trained communist. I was educated to be a communist. My dad was a communist. My granddad was a communist. Hell, I come from a long line of communists. Didn't work for my granddad. Didn't work for my dad. Didn't work for me. And that's why I've come to the conclusion that I don't think it's going to work for you either, Bob. You know, Tom, Harry, Joe. So, you know, now as an old man, I changed, and here's what I went back to. Today, we look with nostalgia upon the good old days, you know, when America used to be the lending nation. Now we're the world's number one debtor nation. We looked at America when we were the world's number one industrial power. Today, we've exported all of our industrial plants over to China and Taiwan, South Korea, and so on. Not exactly clear what made us think that was going to bring us happiness and success, but I guess we thought it was, and we voted for it. You know, election after election, you know, we voted those people into office. And so now, you know, just to give you an illustration how, you know, we can't learn, the people who have caused this economic morass, people like Henry Paulson from Goldman Sachs, you know what we did? We made him the Secretary of the Treasury. And this guy, Tim Geithner, okay, he was Henry Paulson's number two man at Goldman Sachs, so we made him Secretary of the Treasury. And then, you know this guy, Ben Bernanke? He was an understudy of the last guy, you know, that was in as the Fed chairman, you know, Alan Greenspan. And Alan Greenspan, you know, who gave us the bubbles. You know, we call him Bubbles Alan. And Helicopter Ben. Okay. Now, we have watched these guys drive our economy through outsourcing and leveraging and paper money and all the rest of it for the last 50 years, drive us into bankruptcy. And now we have elected a president who has hired these people from Wall Street to solve the problem. Which is like going down to a whorehouse and getting a dose of clap. And then you come back and say, oh, God, I'm sick. I need a cure to clap. I'm going to go down to the whorehouse because that's where they sell it. I mean, it goes beyond stupid. It's now degenerated into insanity. And these people are spending money like you... I've never seen numbers like this. Hell, I got a calculator sitting on my desk. I can't even work out the numbers. If I took off both my shoes, I haven't got enough fingers and toes and calculators here to count up the kind of money that these nitwits are spending to bail us out of this economic morass. And, you know, the average Joe Sixpack, he's out there voting for these people, and he's sitting on the sidelines clapping and cheering and saying, God bless Barack Obama, he's going to save us. All right. So I don't want to be critical here, Bob. I've already tested this. Didn't work for me. So I'll tell you what I did. I took a look at history, and I looked at what was it that created all of this wealth and prosperity in America. And you know what it was? It was the Ten Commandments. It was the 22 principles enshrined in our Constitution that come from the Ten Commandments that did it. I think we'd have got richer faster, and I think we'd have hung on to it longer if we would have practiced more than 22 principles from the Ten Commandments. But anyway, we did 22, and we didn't do too shabby. We did pretty good. We became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, politically, economically, socially, militarily, industrially. I mean, if you just take a look at where America was in 1900, I mean, boy, we were right on top of the world. And now we've kind of frittered it away, kind of like the prodigal son, and now it's gone. You know, it isn't a matter of, boy, we better buckle down or we're going to lose it. Hell, we didn't buckle down, and we lost it. It is gone. G-O-N. Poof. See, the value of your house is already gone, Bob. Past tense. Held your stocks and your investments for the future, you know, all those Winnebagos you were going to buy and all those miles you were going to drive when you retired, it's poof, gone, G-O-N, gone. And for a lot of you, your job's out there, you know, gone. And those of you that still have a job, now listen, I don't care whether your job is gone or not. Let's talk about what is it that we're going to do to recover from this. I mean, you know, if you're waiting for Brock, that's fine. Go sit on the sidelines over there and wait. Frankly, I don't have the time, effort, or energy to waste on these nitwits. They're obviously insane. And as William Buckler said the other day of our president, Barack Obama, he said he's either the world's greatest con man or he's delusional. What or the other? I mean, if the guy actually believes what he's telling us, then he is delusional. If, on the other hand, he knows and understands that what he's telling us is just more lies, well, then he's just a good con man. But in either event, that doesn't make any money for you or me. That isn't going to solve our problem. So let's get down here to the bottom line. You know, when you took that job at IBM and you became a serviceman and you thought you were going to retire there and have this neat pension and all the rest of it, you learned a valuable skill. So I had a student one time, he came in and he said, hey, listen, Mr. Gordon, I see that you've got one of these, at the time it was a copy machine, used to have liquid in it. Remember those old ones had liquid you put in? It was one of them old liquid machines. And he said, hey, listen, I got one over here. It's used, and then it's old. But it's an IBM, and I've reconditioned it, and I'd like to sell that to you. And it's powder, you know, it's one of these IBM powder machines. Now, you know, an IBM machine back in the 1980s, about 1980 to 85, that was a dream come true. I mean, today they're old hat. I got one sitting over here now, you know, that's a little Canon machine, and this little machine I got over here now is 10 times the copy machine that I had in 1980. And without a doubt, it turns out better copies, faster, easier, and cheaper, and, you know, everything about it's better. But anyway, and this guy, he was an IBM serviceman. And an IBM, I'm getting ahead of myself. Wasn't IBM, it was Xerox. Xerox was the number one name in copiers in 1980. I don't even know if they're in business anymore, but Xerox was, you know, if you had a Xerox, you were in the top 400. So he came in and he said, I got this Xerox machine, reconditioned powder machine, blah, 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 and I'll sell this to you for this cut rate price. And I said, my God, I could afford this old Xerox machine, been rebuilt, which I would only dream of. I think they were $5,000 back in those days for a new Xerox machine. You know, for little guys like us, you know, $5,000, you know, that was a lot of bread. So anyway, I said, well, yeah, son, bring it in here. And so he brought it in, he set it up and got me scoped out, and I paid him his money. I forgot how much it was now, $1,500 or something like that. It was a chunk of change, but, you know, it was in my price. I could afford something like that. So I got to talking to this guy, and I said, well, how come you're not working for Xerox? And he said, well, I started with Xerox years ago, and they're a good outfit, and I like them real good. And I worked in Denver, and I made a lot of money, and again, and I got paid well, and, you know, making plenty of money. But I always wanted my own business. I wanted to compete with the Xerox. And so that's what I'm doing now. You see, there's a little niche market out here for me. People like you who cannot afford a Xerox machine can afford an old rebuilt Xerox machine. And Xerox will not rebuild these old machines. And that's because they don't want these old machines out in the marketplace. They want them destroyed so that you can only buy a new one. You have to buy these new machines. That's their business. They sell and service new machines. They're not in the used machine business. They don't like that. And I said, well, that makes all the sense in the world. I understand that. And he said, now, I compete with Xerox, and I can do that very effectively. And I can do it because you can't afford a $5,000 machine, but you can afford a $1,500 machine. And I have the skill and the ability to rebuild these old machines. That's what I'm doing. So I take these old machines in, and I strip them of their parts, and then I can buy new parts, and then I rebuild these machines, and I go out and do that. And you know, that's what every one of us under the Ten Commandment model dreams of doing. And if you want to do that, you can do that too. I don't care who you're working for, what you're doing. You've got skills and ability here, Bob. And your skills and ability are valuable, very valuable. That's why these big corporations hire you and pay you. And that's because they want your labor. They need your labor. Well, so do I, and so do thousands of other little businessmen out here. We need your labor. We need your skills. We need your ability. But you've got to sell something. You've got to have something for me to buy. You've got to be able to compete with this big, big, humongous corporation, which is like falling off of a greased log, standing on a banana peel, going through the Colorado Rapids. I mean, you can't miss. If you just knew how. And it has to do with sales. Now, all of you salesmen out there, you guys are going to come through this very well. No problem at all. And that's because a salesman goes out and sells. And we have to have the salesman to go out and sell. How much would I pay you as a salesman to go out and sell? Well, I'll tell you a little story here. My wife one time was up in Kansas City. She went to one of my schools. That's where I met her. Met her in one of my schools. And we went out to dinner, and we were sitting there chit-chatting a little bit. And she said, I'm in the process of getting a divorce, and I'm unemployed, and I used to be a pretty talented lady. I used to run a business about $250,000 a year, which back in 1980 was a lot of money. Today it would be like maybe $1 million or $2 million a year. In the tree business, she was in the tree reconstruction business. And she said she followed the storms, you know, tornadoes and hurricanes, and now she's in the process of getting a divorce, and she doesn't have any money, and she's got debts and one thing or another. And she said, "I'm really interested in your schools." And I said, "Well, that's very good." And she said, "You sell these schools?" And I said, "I do." And she said, "You know, You don't sell your schools out here in the Midwest or in the South or in the Northeast. And I said, that's right, we don't. We're just a regional school, and we just operate in the West, and we're just selling our schools out in Idaho and Montana and Wyoming. And she says, well, how would you like to sell your schools here in the Midwest, you know, say in Missouri or Iowa or Mississippi or Florida or Texas? And I said, well, I'd like that. Of course I would like that. What businessman, what salesman would not like to sell his product in China, Brazil, around the world, in every state in the union, Alaska, Hawaii? Of course I want to sell my products, my schools in Missouri. And she said, well, if I were to sell your schools here in Missouri, what would you pay me? What would the commission be? Huh. I thunk it up there for a second, and I said, 50%. 50%. Does that sound like an outlandish commission to you? Well, stand by. Let me give you our mid-course reminder, and we'll come back and we'll explore that. Because I think that's the pearl of great price. And I'll tell you why right after this. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law, or then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors, publications, and so on, cited here on the Law Hour, may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. All right, talking about the pearl of great price. Now, we're talking about my wife, and we're talking about a profitable servant. Now, here's a lady. I never met this lady in my life. She's just a student. She just walks into my class. She paid her fee just like everybody else, and she's going to school. But while we're going to school, she approached me, and she said, what would you pay me if I went out and sold your schools. Now, I had a salesman up at our school in Boise called Barrister's Inn. Then we paid him 10%. 10%. And I said to this lady, I'd pay her 50%. Now, why would I pay this lady 50% and I only pay my salesman 10%? See? And the answer is pretty straightforward. See, when you advertise, when you're a businessman like McDonald's, you advertise. And the advertising that you do brings the customer into the store. And so the salesman is in reality an order taker. An order taker. And there's this great big chasm between all of you order takers out there and salesmen. A great big chasm. There's lots of order takers. There's not very many salesmen out there. That's why I said, now, all of you salesmen out there, you people don't have a problem. You're going to get through this like a shot. Well, most of you people think you're salesmen, but you're really not salesmen. You're order takers. And my order taker that we called salesman, he gets all of the leads. And so the leads come in, and we say, well, here, go close the sale. Here's the lead. Go close the sale. And we paid him 10%. Now, this lady comes in, and she says, I will sell your school right out here in Missouri where you don't have any leads, where you don't have anybody that even has heard your name. They don't even know that you exist. And I'm going to go out and sell your school. So, what are you going to pay me? And I said, I'll pay 50%. Now, that number comes from the insurance industry. The insurance industry pays 50% for the insurance salesman who goes out and makes this sale. They don't pay him 50% from then on. They pay him a residual commission of 5% every time you pay your premium from now on. But they'll pay you a big commission going in. So there's a cost of goods sale, a cost of goods sold. And that cost of goods sold, the company takes off right off the top and says, okay, now here's what we make on this, and we'll split that with you 50-50. Boys and girls, anybody will take that deal. You can be employed in the morning. You can walk in any place and say to the guy, would you like me to sell your widgets, sell your this or that or something else? You can walk into the Chevrolet dealer and say, I will go out and sell your Chevrolet automobiles. And I want you to pay me a commission. What's the commission going to be? Now, he's not going to pay you 50% of the suggested retail value of the automobile. But there's a number there. And that 50% commission is going to be a number that you arrive at, and he'll split that with you half and half. But he's not going to give you any leads. Okay, you got to go develop your own leads. It's like selling magazines door to door. That's tough. Not impossible, just tough. Now, that's what a salesman does. A salesman goes out and sells. An order taker takes orders. Order takers get paid 10%, and salesmen get paid 50% of a number, not necessarily 50% of the sale price now of the car, but the sale price has got a number. Cost of goods sold subtracted, there's a profit number, and that owner will split that profit 50-50 with you in a heartbeat. Otherwise, he's not a businessman, and you don't want to work for him anyway. See how simple that is? Now, I went back home, and I told my business associates there what I had done. And to a man, they choked. They gasped in holy righteous indignation. You lunatic, you fool. And I said, why am I a lunatic? Why am I a fool? Well, because that's an outlandish commission. You should pay her 10%. Well, number one, she's not going to work for 10%. That's number one. Number two, this is business that we don't have, aren't going to get, and never are going to get. And she's going to go create it. Do you know that within 6 months, she had sold more than all the rest of the school combined by herself. And I paid her the commission, just like I said I would. Was she valuable? She was a pearl of great price. Didn't cost me anything. Was I a pearl of great price? You bet. Because, you see, she didn't have a job, and she needed work. And she's a salesman. And she said, I'll go out and sell it. And she did. She went out and sold it. Now, most of you people out there are not salesmen, and you can't do that. Okay, yeah, that is, you can't sell my product for me, but you can sell your product for you. Now, let me show you how to do that. I had a guy come up to me. His name is Jess Sears. God love old Jess. Well, Jess is dead now, but he was a painter. And one day, I was in Boise, Idaho, with my lead mechanic. His name was Jim Honey. Old Jim, he's dead now too, but old Jim and I were plumbers. You know, we're on the big money. We're not painters. Painters don't make a lot of money, but plumbers do. Plumbers are gougers, and so we're out here plumbing and making money. And I'd bought a house. Actually, I didn't buy this house. Come think of it, I was remodeling this house on a profit splitting deal with the owner, who didn't have the money to do the house. He bought this house to remodel, but he didn't know how to do it. And so he contacted me, and so I went out and I made him a deal, and I said, okay, I'll rebuild the house for you. And when you sell it, you split with me 50-50. See? And so he said, we'd do that. Well, anyway, Jim and I are over here. We'd already done the mechanical work. Now we got to paint this house. And Jim and I are up here on, it's got four dormers on this house. And these dormers are just full of little panes of glass with these little sticks, you know, that go in between them. This is what separates the painters, you know, from the amateurs, you know, that run around rolling walls. You know, anybody can roll paint on a flat wall, but when it comes down to doing the trim work, you know, then that's what requires a painter. So anyway, we're up there painting away up there with our little brushes, you know. And pretty soon there's a car pulls up to the curb, and this guy gets out. Now, he's wearing his white painter bib overalls. See, the painters all wear white, and us plumbers all wear blue. I don't know why we do that, but we do. So this painter gets out. Now, he's got paint all over his bib overalls. So when he got out of the car, I could see immediately that he was a painter because he was wearing his painter's uniform. Just like a lawyer, you know, you can tell a lawyer instantly. Just look at the lawyer's uniform, a three-piece suit, wingtip shoes, and an attaché case. You just look at the guy. Lawyer. All right, so he says, hi, how's things going? I see you're painting up there. And nice day, and we're chit-chatting a little bit there, you know. And Jim is up there, you know, trying to paint and trim this out. And so he said, pretty soon the conversation got around. He says, you looking for a painter? And then I said, no, I'm painting it myself. I'm rebuilding this house, and I don't need any help. And I got Jim here. He's my man, Jim, and we're doing this. And he said, that's pretty tedious work up there that you're doing. Then I said, boy, you can say that again. And then he said, how long does it take you to trim out one of those dormers? And I said, well, at the rate we're going, my guesstimate would be about 10 hours each. And there's four of them, so I'm looking at maybe 40 hours to do this, and two of us doing it. About 80 man hours would be my guess. And he said, yeah, that trimming is pretty skilled work. He said, you know, just about anybody can roll paint on the wall, you know, today. But it's a painter is a guy that can match colors and can trim without getting the paint all over the expensive hardwood floors and things like that. And he said, now, if I was painting that dormer up there, I would paint that dormer in about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And Jim and I had been working on this thing already, you know, all morning, and we already had maybe about 8 man-hours into it, and we weren't getting, you know, about half done maybe, or not even. And when this guy said he could paint that dormer in about an hour and a half, I just was incredulous. I said, that, you know, you're out here talking, you know, with your head up the wrong end of your anatomy here, son. Of course, he wasn't son. He's older than I was at the time. Then he said, now, I tell you what, he said, I'm in between jobs right now. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, I'm unemployed. I laughed, and we kind of chuckled a little bit, you know. And then he said, now I'll tell you what I'd do for you. He said, you got those four dormers up there to do, and you're working on number one there. You're about half done. And he said, it's about 11 o'clock right now. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll paint those four dormers up there for $40. $10 a dormer. Now, I'm paying my plumber up here, who's working on this with me, see. I'm paying this guy $6 an hour right now. I've already paid him $24 for the 4 hours that we've been working on it, plus mine. I've got $48 in painting half the dormer, and I still got the other half to do, plus three more. And this guy says, I'll paint all four of them for $40. $10 a dormer. Trim them out. Not just the sticks now. You've got to trim out the faceboards and the windowsills and the whole nine yards. Says, I'll do it all. I said, son, you're on. I said, get your tools out here, boy, and go to work. I said, Jim, let's go do something intelligent, like go down to the bar and have a beer. So Jim and I climbed down off the roof, and the old Jess, he climbed up there, and I said, now we're going to go do something else. Now, we went out, and we didn't go have a beer. Now, we went out and did some more work. We're out here doing our work and doing our stuff, and then I got to thinking, I said, well, this guy's going to paint these dormers up here. Now, I'm not out anything. I haven't paid this guy a nickel, and I'm not going to pay this guy a nickel until those four dormers are done. And when those four dormers are done, I'm going to give this guy two $20 bills. So we came back at the end of the day about 5 o'clock, and old Jess, he's down there, he smoked. You know, Jesse's sitting down there on the curb waiting for his wife to come back and pick him up. And so I pulled up to the curb, and I got out, and I walked around the two dormers that were facing on the side street. I could see that they were done. I walked around the other side of the house, and the other two dormers were done. I came back around, and I said, you know, you're a pretty good painter. And he said, yes, sir, I am. I said, that's what I do. I'm a painter, and I'm good at it. And he said, I'm pretty reasonably priced, wouldn't you say? And I said, son, you're very reasonably priced. I said, you looking for a job? He said, I am. I hired Jess. He died working for me. I mean, now, this is a guy who knew how to paint, and he had a skill. Now, all of you people listening to me, you people have skills. You people, whatever you do, I don't care who you are or what in the hell you're doing, you've got that skill. And this guy could dog a job. This guy could take a week to paint one of them dormers if he put his mind to it, or he could paint that thing in an hour and a half. When he got after it now, he could do it. Now, that's what I've been telling you all week. If you people want to work, you can work. Now, I put Jess on. I paid him by the hour. And when Jess wanted to dog a job, he'd dog a job. But when I told him, Jess, I got to have this out, and here's the price. And so what I'd do with Jess is this. I'd say, listen, and I'd take him out, and I'd say, bid this job in for me, Jess. And he'd bid that job in. I said, okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to split this 50-50 with you, Jess. Jess would go out. He'd bid a job in for $1,000 or whatever it is. I would go out and charge $2,000 on that job. Jess would take $1,000, and I'd take $1,000. We painted houses. We just painted all over the place. Jess made more money working for me on piece rate on that 50-50 deal than he could make himself. And that's because I had lots of work, and I had lots of work coming into me. Jess never had to sell a job. He never went out and sold jack diddly squat. Jess was a painter. He wasn't a salesman. I'm the salesman. I went out and sold the jobs. I just needed somebody that would do the work. Hell, if I had somebody that would do the work, I'd go out and sell it. And I'd go out and sell more work if I had. I've made deals with people. I've said, listen, I'll go out here and then I'll front the money and I'll do this for you. And if you'll come in here and work. And do you know people don't want that? They don't want to work. Not as long as they got welfare, food stamps, or they've got an order taker's job. They're not going to work. But I'm telling you, boys and girls, now that the depression's upon us, you're going to have to go to work. And there's money to be made. Money to be made. Now, you're not going to make the kind of dollars that you were making in boom times. But the money to be made is the difference between the guy that's unemployed over here and is standing around idle, and the guy that's working over here and he's getting paid something. And the guy that's working and getting paid something over here, that's the job that we're after. That's where the competition's at. All these unemployed people over here, they're no competition at all. It's the guys that are working. Now, we're in a race to the bottom, so understand that. This is what happened in Argentina. You're working for $10 an hour, but as unemployment grows, there's more and more people that are willing to do that job for less and less money. So a guy that's paying $10 an hour to you right now today, somebody else comes along tomorrow and says, I'll do it for $8. So you're out and he's in. The next day, somebody comes along and says, I'll do it for $6. He's out and the new guy's in. Somebody else comes along and says, hey, I'll do it for $4. He's out and the next guy's in. This is that race to the bottom. Make up your minds to it. But here's the good news. There's a bottom somewhere. We don't know where that's at yet, but there's a bottom someplace. In 1940, a guy would work for $1 an hour. That's $8 a day, 1940. That was carpenter's wages in 1940. And a guy that was making $1 an hour, $8 a day, he was the guy that was working. Hell, he was on top of the world. He didn't have a problem in the world. $8 a day was good wages, you know, for the times. Now, there's going to be good wages for the times. Right now, it's $150, $200 a day. You can write that off. That isn't going to happen. But there's going to be a number out here someplace. And when there's a number, remember that what you're after is half, 50%. 50%. That's the number that you're looking for. Now, it's 50% of a number. We don't know what that number is, but we know what our commission is, 50%. And boys and girls, anybody is going to hire you and pay you half. But you got to perform. He'll go out and sell it. You do the job, he'll give you half of it. Why is that? Well, because he's making half. I couldn't make a dollar unless Jess Sears was out working. Jess was a worker. He was a good worker. And he painted and he made me a ton of money. Just like Jim Honey did. Old Jim was a good plumber. He was a good, we call him mechanics out on the job. He was a good mechanic. He could plumb. He could wire. He could paint. He could roof. He could carpenter. If there was a job that needed doing, old Jim could do it. And because he was so versatile and so valuable, I could go out and rebuild houses day after day after day. And when I put Jim on a job, that job's going to get done. No two ways about it, and it's going to get done right. And he was fast. Now, you put those combinations together, and I'm telling you, there isn't anybody out there that won't hire you. All right, now that's the Jess Sears story. I'm going to circle that one off. I told you about Tony Nunes and the Nickel of Bale, didn't I? Now, here's your 50% commission. Now, that's what you're looking for. Now, if you're a salesman and you're going out selling, I don't care what you're selling. All of us out here are starving for customers. It's difficult to make sales right now. That's what's going on at Gainesville Building Supply. If I went into Gainesville Building Supply and said, listen, let's arrive at a number over here. I want half. I'm going to go out and sell lumber. I'm going out and sell these supplies. I'm going out knocking on doors. And when I come in here with an order, I want you to pay me half of a number. What's the number going to be? And you go sit down with the boss, and he'll work it out, and he'll say, okay, I gotta, you know, when I buy a unit of lumber, I can't give you $300 out of $600 a thousand, because I gotta pay $300 a thousand. But the profit margin on that $600 unit of lumber is going to be, you know, $300. Well, if my profit's $300, if that's what I'm moving for, you sell that stuff for me and I'll give you the $150. When customers come into the store, they're paying their salesman 10%. But if you go out and sell it in tough times, they'll pay you 50. Same thing with insurance. During the Depression years, if you could sell insurance, 50%. That's where they came up with that 50% number. So tuck that one away on your heart. Now, can you hire yourself a job? Because that's what Jess Sears did. He was driving down the street and he saw two guys working up here on the roof of a house. As he's driving by, he sees my pickup. My pickup has got a sign on it, and it says George Gordon, General Contractor. So now he says to himself, "Well, here's a guy that's actually working." He looks up there and says, "Here's these two guys that are up here painting. Are these two painters or are these two mechanics up here that really don't want to paint?" And he struck pay dirt because he found two mechanics that didn't want to paint. Now, that's what we call hiring yourself a job. Now, next time I'm going to show you how to hire yourself a job, and I'll tell you a couple of stories about how to do that. But that's precisely what Jess did here. Now, he was a contractor himself in years past, but he was an alcoholic, and he got to the point where he was drinking more than he could... Then he could sell. Old Jess, he used to go out to lunch. He'd come back and he'd get up on a scaffold and he'd be wobbling around up there. He'd just scare the living hell out of you. Never fell down. Never had a problem. Old Jess, he could work better drunk than he could sober. In fact, when he was sober, he couldn't work at all. So these alcoholics, which are generally in construction work, you know, they got to have a little booze like my Uncle Carol, you know, to calm them down. Otherwise, they get careless. Now, the moral to the story is there's a way to hire yourself a job, and you've got to be a salesman to do that. Now, all of you people are salesmen. You're driving truck for Walmart. You're selling your truck driver skill every day to Walmart. You're a salesman. And every day you come in and punch the clock and do all the right things over here, you're selling yourself to them. That's what they want, and you're giving them what they want. Now, have you thought about going out on your own? Because Walmart's going to be cutting back on their truck drivers. As people buy less and less goods out of Walmart, they're going to be hauling less and less goods into their stores. So there's going to be more and more unemployment. It isn't that every truck driver is going to be laid off, but if you got 50 and you're going to cut back by half, 25 of them are going to be cut off. When their sales go down by 50%, they're going to cut back on half their salesmen, half their truck drivers, half their buyers, half their purchasing agents, half of their, everybody's going to get laid off. So let's wake up and smell the coffee over here. If you want to know how bad the unemployment's going to get, almost everybody says 40%. I haven't seen any economist that is not expecting a 40% unemployment rate here in the United States. In the last depression, it was 25%. Now, add to that to 40%. Now, there's some guys that are out there saying it's going to be worse than the last depression, and they're talking about the Argentine model of 62%. Some. Not too many now, but there's some guys that are sad, really pessimistic, and they're sitting there saying, hey, I think we're going to see 60% unemployment. When we get up here to 40 to 60%, you're going to see bidding wars on the work that's there, and you're going to see civil unrest in the streets. So tuck it away in your heart, boys and girls. Next time we'll take a look at how to hire yourself a job here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But I'm out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right there and remind you for the last time, at least in this program, that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.